We have a small audience of theorists, mostly, so that's good. I can be as formal as I want. So let me start by, I think everyone in this room knows what gauge mediation is. Gauge mediation is a Susie-breaking mass scheme, which is flavor-blind, whereby everything but Higgs gets mass. All of the masses are determined by one mass parameter. It's a very predictive framework, and therefore we like it.
At least it was predictive.
That's right. So let me talk about what the definition is of gauge mediation. This is a definition given by Seiberg et al. Gauge mediation is a form of mediation such that when gauge couplings are turned off, Susie-breaking is not communicated to the standard model. So this is the most general definition they give of gauge mediation.
So there's no such thing.
So
well, because of gravity.
Well, so you can imagine. So there's gravity mediation. So gravity mediation works kind of like this. Imagine that I have, you know, my spark fields.
Just take M Planck to infinity first.
Right, and then I couple them to some field directly, and this thing gets a BEV and an F term, and this is gravity mediation. Then these things just get, these sparks just get masses proportional to this F term, except that they violate flavor all over the place, because, you know, there's no reason for these couplings to be generally diagonal. So this is what I would call like the Protestant version of Susie-breaking communication, where, you know, if you're Protestant, you can talk directly to God with no intercessor and ask for forgiveness, just like the sparks can talk directly to the hidden sector. And this is no good. So I meant gauge mediation, whereby...
So that's Catholic.
Right, this is the Catholic version of Susie-breaking, where the sparks don't talk directly to the hidden sector, they talk to an intermediary, the messengers, and those things talk to the hidden sector. Just like I ask the priest for forgiveness, and the priest asks God. And obviously, Catholicism is far superior. And so Seiberg says, if I throw the priest out the window, my sins will cease to be forgiven, and we'll all go to hell. Right? So that's Seiberg's definition of gauge mediation. So I have a little bit of a problem with this definition. For example, I think this is a bit too general, because under this definition, anomaly mediation is gauge mediation. If you take the gauge couplings and you turn them off, leave it. Susie-breaking also ceases to be communicated. But let's forget about that for the moment. This is the definition of gauge mediation. So that is minimal gauge mediation work. So I have these things called the messengers. This is largely reviewed for almost everyone in this group. These things are charged under the standard model gauge groups only. These things couple directly to a field, a hidden sector field, which has a BEV and an F term. So X has a supersymmetric mass and a non-supersymmetric mass. And then I can write down diagrams like this with gaugitos and messengers in the loop. The supersymmetric and non-supersymmetric masses appear. And then just by some dimensional analysis, I know this is a proportional to two gauge couplings, alpha, there's a 4 pi for the loop. And then it's just needs to be proportional to a mass scale, and the only one I have available is F over M. So here are the gauge masses in the gauge mediation. So right away, okay, so here are the gauge masses, and then the scalars get masses at two loops. So here are my scalar particles, they get two loop masses. And these things are proportional to not the ratio of alphas like the gauginos, but the ratio of alpha squares. Okay. So this seems great. Everything I want to gets a mass except for the Higgs, which is a generic problem with Susie. And everything is proportional to just this mass scale F over F. So what's the problem here? The problem here is that you'll notice that there's a huge hierarchy in gay genomasses proportional to the ratio of alphas. So the gluino is much heavier than the other gay genos. And in fact, at two loops, the problem is even worse. And what you find is that everything that couples to QCD is much, much heavier than everything that doesn't. So for example, your squarks are much, much heavier than the right-handed selectron. So that if I have 100 GeV, so if my right-handed selectron mass is 100 GeV, and this is like the lowest thing that's consistent with current experimental balance, provided that this thing is stable. And in fact, even if it's not, because if this violates R parity or something and decays, this bound isn't much, pushed much below 100 GeV, then my squark mass is something like 715 GeV. So you see I have a huge hierarchy between masses in minimal gauge mediation. So what does this mean? This means that in my Higgs sector, the Higgs soft mask is corrected by the stops, and this correction goes roughly like this. It's proportional to y top squared, which is big, times the mass of the stop squared, which is big, times this log of scales. So that, and then in my Higgs sector, there I have conditions for the electroweak minimum. These conditions are known, and basically a whole bunch of masses need to cancel down to the Z mass, and when they do that, I get a tuning of roughly, you know, mz squared over the soft Higgs mass squared, and this ratio is like roughly 1 over 189, just for these like 750 GeV squarks. So there's this sort of terrible tuning in the Higgs sector that comes with minimal gauge mediation. So maybe you say you don't want to worry about this because there's another problem with SUSY, and that's that the tree-level Higgs masses has to be less than 91 GeV. It has to be less than the Z mass, but that we know from experiment the Higgs is 115 GeV. So normally we say that we need this gigantic tuning, otherwise the Higgs sector doesn't make sense. But what we're sort of assuming is that the Higgs sector in general, in gauge mediation, needs extra stuff in it anyway. I need to generate a mu term, I need to generate a b term. So I might imagine that somehow, by some dynamic, something will come along, something else, maybe the NMSSM, something will come and will fix the discrepancy between what theory says the Higgs mass is and the 115 GeV the experiment says that it is. But even if something else comes and fixes the whole Higgs sector, I still have this tuning, and I don't like this. So what I want to do is try to find some way to still keep all the parts I like about gauge mediation, but sort of like relax these constraints. So, by the way, let me just write down, by the way, what the minimal gauge mediated prediction is scale of mass squares. It goes like these sort of group factors times ratios of alpha squared times these mass scales squared. So just take one second. So there are three of these things here. Sorry, this is hypercharged. This one's for hypercharge. So how many parameters could I possibly have if let's say I wanted to break all the mass relations of gauge mediation, but keep the general framework, how many mass parameters could I possibly have? Cyberg and Company says 6. Why is that? I can have 3 separate scales for the gauginos, and then each of these mass scales could be independent of the scalars. So that's 3 more. So the most general form of gauge mediation has 6 parameters in it. And this is sort of what I want to achieve. So how do I get 6 parameters? Well, before I worry about getting 6, I have to worry about getting more than 1. Because in minimal gauge mediation, I have F over M, and this is the same thing that appears in each of these 3 scalars. By the way, if you just look at this formula, it's easy to see where I pulled this. out of. The right-handed electrons don't participate here or here, they only get this contribution, and whereas the squarks do, and alpha 3 squared is way bigger than alpha 1 squared. That's what we're okay. So let's just worry about getting more than one parameter. So normally what I do is I have my messengers here, and they couple to just one field, x, and this gets a supersymmetric and a non-supersymmetric mass. So the first thing that I might try to do is to say, okay, these things are usually, you know, a 5 and 5 bar of SU5. And they have coupling here. Let me split the couplings to doublets and triplets and see if that works. So the first thing I do is I'll give the triplet messengers, which I'm going to call Q, one coupling, and the doublet messengers, another coupling. And x gets the following masses. So then, when I look at these diagrams, I see I have two scales. One is for the triplets here, and that goes like lambda q f over lambda q m. And then I have one for the doublets, and that goes like lambda l f over lambda l m. And so I could have hoped that if I just split the couplings between the doublets and the triplets, I would get two mass scales here. But unfortunately, these couplings just cancel out, and these two mass scales are the same. And this is not enough to break the general gauge mediator predictions. So I have to take this a step further. Now, instead of having one x, I'll do the minimum thing and have two. So now I have two scales. So I have two fields in the intersector x1 and x2, which I'm going to couple to messengers. They each have their own couplings. And L2, x2, O bar. And now you can sort of see that a miracle occurs. Because if I go ahead and do these diagrams and I write all this stuff down, I get. This thing here. Or triplets. And then I'm going to get this thing here for doublets. Sorry, can't wait. This is where I wish that I had done a PowerPoint talk.
Since I don't have gauge coupling unification, right?
They don't have gauge genome mass unification anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But the gauge couplings will still unify. It's just that in the hidden sector I've broken. Now I've allowed doublet triplet splitting.
And even before, if you had lambda q and lambda l not equal,
right,
then you would have the messenger threshold would violate unification, right?
Yeah.
So if it split a lot, you would. But that's right. So I mean, I think generically, people. Step one is ignore it. Step two is assume it's not too big.
Step three, fine tune it so the unification looks better.
Yeah.
So what I've added here is 2 5-5 bars. Right. Split these couplings, and now you can see by some miracle this cancellation no longer happens. If I want to cross these out, I get lambda q1 on the downstairs. And these are different. So at last I have my two different scales for lambda q and lambda l. And so my gauge genome masses are now split. So I have one here controlling the gluinos, and one here controlling what is the wino, and the bino is the combination of these two things. So now this situation looks a whole lot better to me, because what I can do is take this thing and like push it way down, and take this thing and push it way up. My squarks here don't have to be heavy. I can take this and make it very small. So I can get the light squarks that I wanted. This still isn't 6 parameters. This is only 2. In fact, you might say to yourself, if I could throw in, you know, 2 singlets and get 2 parameters, and 1 singlet is 1 parameter, then maybe I can throw in three singlets, which are five, the best you five, you get three parameters, and so on and so forth. Unfortunately, that does not work. That doesn't work because the only thing you're ever going to be doing, there will only ever be two scales when you do this. So this lambda q, as I throw in more and more singlets, this becomes lambda q sub I, f sub I, over lambda q sub I, m sub I.
You could use more complicated messenger sectors, right, to get
yes,
more complicated.
That's right.
More
right.
Parameters.
That's right. But no matter how many singlets I'm going to add, I'm just going to, how many singlets I add that are 5s of SU5, I'm just going to sort of continue in this way. This can all be defined as one parameter always. And this is the same. This lambda q is lambda c, and this thing, lambda l, is lambda w. That's all that ever appears. So this model here, well, it's not a model yet, but this is still fairly predictive. It does a little bit of a better job in avoiding the problems of tuning, but I still want more parameters out of it. So how do I do that? Well, the only thing I could do is complicate the messenger sector. So 5-5 bar, these are two parameters. What if I added a 10 and a 10 bar? So that's what we call a three-parameter model. So 10 and 10 bar. So 5-5 bars is two parameters. 1-10-10 bar. So now I'm back to sort of this more simple thing here. Sets of messages, because in this 10 bar I'm going to have more doublets and triplets. So sort of this is what the messenger sector looks like. So now I'm attaching multiple scalars to this one set of messages, 10 bar here, these things are the couplings. Alright? And now I get three parameters out of this. So my Guido mask is going to look like this. I have this scale here called lambda q. My amino mass is going to look like this. And my amino mass is going to sort of be an S. It's going to have three parameters in it. So now you see that with just a 10 and 10 bar as my messenger, what I have now is three completely independent gauge unit masses. So now this is really fun. I can make this thing sort of arbitrarily small. And the Guido mass, the only thing that's really putting a huge bound on this is that experiment says that my latest charge unit has to be greater than 105 GeV. So in fact, with three parameters, this is pretty fun because. With three parameters, this is pretty fun because as long as this thing allows this to happen, and the Guido is greater than 51 GeV, which is like the new experiment, the new theoretical bound, these things can be whatever I want. So, having a crazy gauge unit sector is a lot of fun because now I can do things like abnormal Higgs decays and have a lot of like fun, crazy signatures. But again, three parameters is the most I can ever get out of 1-10 and 10 bar. What if I want even more parameters? Well, no problem. What I can sort of do is take this and add them together and get five parameters. So if I have so 1-5-5 bar, 1-10 and 10 bar, and that's what we call the five parameter model. And if I want six, then what I would need is either two 10 is either two tens or a ten and two fives. But there's a sort of a problem with having two ten and ten bars, and that's that each one of these has three triplets in it, so that's six, and that's bad for unification. That unification is now is marginal if I have five triplets.
So I think, I mean, it's very clear how you're splitting these parameters for the gay genos,
mm-hmm.
but it's sort of less clear that if you now, if you keep playing this game, that these parameters enter in a different way in the scalars than they do in the gay genos, right? So in other words, once you've split the three gay genos,
right.
you might think that perhaps, you know, the same three parameters, lambdas, whatever you call them, one,
now
two, and three will appear. So you just check that by explicit calculation, or is there a more insightful
so
way to see
it
that?
It gets harder and harder each time. So here you have, you know, there's six parameters, and there's a sort of like four mass relations that you need to adhere. There's sort of like, there's six parameters, and there's like, you can look and find three mass relations, and you have three left over. By the time you get to, you know, six, it's really difficult. The mass relations in this sector have hundreds, like 100 terms in them, and
you've just by brute force just check to make sure that there aren't any relations.
That's right. You write your mathematical code. But one thing comes and saves you, and that's that you wouldn't want anything more than two tens, just because that's, you know, a ten and two fives is completely marginal for unification. And this, so you cut yourself off. And just like, and there's limits also, just like no matter how many 5-5 bars you add, you're only ever going to get two parameters. At some point, you know, beyond adding two 10-10 bars, you're not going to get any more than six. There'll always be six. So, and six is the most. So what we want to just do is find the most economical way to get six.
Did you? I think that you might be able to get some other patterns with SU3 cubed. You can have funny representations of
SU3
cubed. So trinification is, if you have complete trinification multiplets, you can also preserve unification.
And
so you could have messengers be in some, like, for example, you know how a trinification works. One of the SU3s is SU3 color, the other contains SU2, and then hypercharge is in the other two SU2s. And so you can have things like, you know, for example, you know, 8, 1, 1 plus 1, 8, 1 plus, you know.
Oh,
so that's a representation that's totally unlike any SU5 representation.
We haven't actually.
But it unifies.
Yeah, we haven't looked
at
that.
You could look at those too.
That's pretty interesting. Some other things that I've been thinking about doing are kind of getting new sort of whatever mu terms through gay geno condensates and that kind of thing that you could sort of stick onto this and like. That will be an extra mass parameter in these theories. Actually, I can talk to you about that later. But
okay.
there are ways that you can use like the 4-1 model to get new b mu terms and new terms for messengers that also were extra mass parameters. But yeah, this way the best you could do is 6 parameters, and the best way to do that is a 10 and 2 fives, or less.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what I would say marginal for unification. So the thing that John Mason, who's a grad student I work with this on, and I are thinking about doing is sort of doing like parameter space scans of the different gauge mediated models with different numbers of parameters. So it's sort of, there's like a famous one that people did for MSUGRA, where MSUGRA looks pretty awful, right? Where you sort of write down, you know, mu versus tangent beta in parameter space, and you see, you know, where does the Higgs sector not work? Where's this ruled out because this electron is too light? Blah 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 blah. And so I think this would be a really good thing to do. For example, with 2-parameter models, this is like the most concise to see like how good this is and what kind of predictions.
For those things, I thought the most constraining thing there is exactly this tuning. In other words, they actually demand that they get the Higgs mass large.
For the
left bounds, and then they have to pay the price of this tuning, and that's why those scans are so bad.
I mean, it's a lot of stuff. I mean, it's a lot of things. The Higgs sector does like a lot of like a bunch of stuff, but also like the Chargino mass bound, for example, gives out a bunch of their parameter space, and like the Skvorek mass bounds. And, the thing with these this needs to be pasted onto something else, because as this is, there's no mu term and there's no b term. So it could be that doing these scans is really difficult because you have to pick exactly the, you know, pick the NMSSM, you know, pick your favorite thing to like paste it onto, and this might completely change qualitatively the scans, like which of these things would be best. But this is sort of a project that we're gonna start to check out. So hopefully I've convinced you that by sort of screwing with the messenger sector, you don't change the overall big picture of gauge mediation, but you do get really different predictions about what the spectrum looks like. If you want to add, so all of these, in order to generalize and get a lot of mass parameters, usually what we're going to need is more than one messenger. There's, you know, 10-10 bonds, that's one, okay. But like if I want two fives, if I want a 10 and two fives, I'm going to have to deal with gauge mediation where I have more than one messenger at once. And there's a problem in general with having more than one messenger, and this is the problem of messenger parity. So this is another thing that we worried about when we built these models. And that's just the problem with messenger parity is that you can write down one loop masses for squarks, which are proportional to hypercharge, that have the messengers in the loop. And so since they're proportional to hypercharge, some of them can be tachyonic, and also they can just be in general way too big. And we want to forbid these things. So let me sort of write down what these things look like. So let's suppose for the moment I just have one messenger. So I have, you know, M1, M1 bar. I can start to write down a whole bunch of diagrams of these are squarks. Here's an insertion of the D-term of hypercharge. This is just, you know, open Wessel diagram finds what the D-term is. And here's a loop. So this loop looks like this. This is an insertion with the F-term. And this is a one-loop mass of squarks. So this looks pretty bad, but so long as I only have this one set of messengers, it's no big deal because I also have this competing diagram that has M1 bar here. Okay. And these things will exactly cancel pairwise, right? So, but you can see where if I have more than one messenger and the messengers are allowed to couple together, for example, if I have two 5-5 bars, then I could start writing mass terms here that mix up M1 and M2, and in fact I'm not going to get this pairwise cancellation anymore unless I have what's called an interchange symmetry of the messengers. So if I imagine that I have, you know, I can write down M1 and 2 bar and 2 and 1 bar. I'm going to start to get really dangerous cross terms. And these things are not going to cancel unless, for example, the mass, the supersymmetric mass of M1 M2 bar is the same as M2 M1 bar. And that means that I have to have an interchange symmetry that sends M1 to M2 and M2 to M1. So,
or you could have a charge conjugation symmetry, right? So you could have a symmetry that sends everybody into their bar.
That's right.
Their own bar.
That's right. So if I go and I write down just for two messengers, say the most generic mass terms I can have, I need at least one interchain symmetry where either I have to send M1 to M2 or I have to send M1 to M1 bar, or I have to send M1 to M2 bar, which would also force the masses to be equal. That would also be okay. But you see, some of these aren't, these two, you know, don't respect hypercharge. So really, if I want this to be a fundamental symmetry when I start model building in the high energy, this is sort of what I need to impose. So I need to either find a way to impose this, and this is the messenger parity that lives all the way down, or I need to impose some symmetry of which these things are an accident. So, okay. So let me retell the story up until this point. I showed you sort of what the low energy gauge mediation looks like. And I said that I need to mess up the messenger sector when I do that, and then I said that messing up the messenger sector sometimes requires me to have to worry about messenger parity, where I have to have, you know, impose some high energy symmetries on which messenger parity is an accident.
Do you have to eventually, I forgot what the story was if the symmetry was exact, this discrete symmetry, then you would have some stable messenger and you'd have some relic density. What was the story with that? Is it totally model dependent?
Yeah.
Can it be small enough? Can be dark matter? What's the story?
I
forgot there was some story.
So we haven't yet worried about the cosmological.
Was people worried about this in the old days.
Messenger parity. Right. This is brought up quite a while ago. I think messenger parity, and then.
Yeah, I mean, there was even a claim, I think, with some regime that it was a good dark matter candidate.
Messengers
could be, yeah, messengers. I think it was Demopolis and Giudice. But I don't know.
Stable, they don't decay.
Yeah. Okay, anyway. But you could always, if you wanted to, you could always break this by some tiny amount, presumably, to make them unstable and small
but
enough that these diagrams
right.
aren't big. Because you only have to make these down by a loop factor or something. Right?
Yep. So, So this is sort of what I want to call the low energy part of the talk, and I still have a little time left. But now you might ask yourself, you know, how? Okay, so I wrote down a bunch of stuff, but how would I build this, like, and how would all this stuff arise dynamically? So now what I want to do is sort of jump into the hidden sector and show you a couple of models where I prove that I can actually do this. This isn't just some fantasy that I wish I had two parameters of gauge mediation. So, sort of, there were earlier attempts to do this, like Dine and Mason mentioned this first, and they sort of kind of built this, except instead of mass terms, they used gauge genome condensation. So you have these kind of things. This condenses. I'm not going to do any of that. What I'm going to do is attempt to build these using only chiral fields. So what I'm going to do is attempt to build the simplest models possible. So these are models with no non-renormalizable interactions. And everything is going to be chiral.
So the point here is to try and get these two different x's.
Yep. So
if I took a theory with just one x, and I just added a supersymmetric messenger mass to it, right, that would effectively give me a model with two x's.
Well, okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to dynamically generate the.
So you want to dynamically generate all mass scales. So I was going to say this is a cheap way
almost
of just turning any theory that works for the old thing to one of the just at the price of introducing an explicit.
Or should I say
mass
I
want to
dynamically generate the supersymmetric and non-supersymmetric masses that the messengers get. So these are going to couple to some chiral fields, mm-hmm. which are going to get F terms and BEVs. And I want to dynamically break Susie. And so I want everything to be weakly coupled, chiral, and no non-normalizable interactions. So you'll see that there's going to be one mass scale in the theory that I'm going to assume comes down from on high. So this is the how do I achieve this? So first of all, I have to make sure there's a couple of things I have to have happen. First of all, Susie has to break. Okay. That's important, and there's a theorem from Seiberg and Nelson that says that if I'm working, you know, with these kinds of theories, then I need to have an R symmetry for Susie to break. And that if I spontaneously break the R symmetry, that's sufficient for Susie to break. So what I'm going to do in the interest of being as concise as possible is I'm going to assume I'm going to write down only theories that have an R symmetry. And then it's, and then I'm going to dynamically break it, and that will break Susie. So in addition to all this stuff, I'm going to assume that there's an R symmetry when I write down my hidden sector models. Right. So now I'm going to write down the simplest model with the fewest number of fields that I can think of that breaks Susie, where I have a field X that gets an F derivative of. And this is going to be the base from which I do all my model building thereafter. So here's my simplest model. It has three fields in it, x, phi 1, and phi minus 1. Everything has an R charge. Let me just call this x and 2. And then I can say that everything's R charge is equal to its subscript here. So everything in the superpotential is R charge 2, is completely R symmetric. All right. And then I can write down my Aftrom equations and see that Susie breaks. My F terms. Oh. You can see these aren't all solvable at once. Susie is broken. And this thing gets an F term and it gets a bound. And this is simple. So all the theories I'm going to build are going to sort of look like this. You see there is this non-dynamically generated mass scale, but like I've dynamically given X and F term in a BEV, and this is the thing that I want to couple to messengers. So we noticed something when we were model building in the hidden sector, and that's that everything isn't really so nice. There, in fact, are these things called runaway directions, where there are directions in field space where the theory becomes supersymmetric. In this case, if we assume that we take the field phi 1 to 0, so we're going to let it be proportional to epsilon. And phi minus 1 be proportional to 1 over epsilon. I could solve this equation if
so
I make
thought,
this.
I thought the point of this is that you wanted to get two different Susie breaking fields, two different x's. So right now, just want to where we are
right
now
just
we just have 1.
Yeah,
and
right
it's
now.
X, so in your vacuum, the F term for x is going to have a non-zero value, but the other two guys have zero F terms in that vacuum.
These aren't coupling to messengers.
Okay.
They can't. These are just there to aid in Susie breaking. All I'm trying to do right now is something really boring, is make this model work. By the way, I forgot to mention, I want to spontaneously break R symmetry. This requires fields where R charge is not equal to 0 or 2 if I spontaneously break R symmetry.
I mean, there are many other sort of a rapidity type
yeah.
models you could have used here.
This
right?
is that's right.
Weird.
This is just the simplest model that I can think of with R charge is different from 0 to 2, where Susie breaks and this thing gets a bev. And I just want to demonstrate that this works and that I can conquer this runaway direction. And then I could sort of build off of this and add more x's and sort of achieve what I want. So, as I was saying, the problem with a lot of model building is that there are these runaway directions, the directions in which Susie is restored. So if I let this thing become very small, this thing become very small, this thing become very big, you can see. And I could solve this equation. And in fact, if this is of order, x2 is of order epsilon squared, I can solve this equation, and this thing will also go to 0. So there's a direction in field space in which all the F terms approach 0, and everything looks supersymmetric. So what I have to do to avoid this is sort of do, and there's also a moduli space, okay, where x is undetermined if the fields phi 1 and phi minus 1 are 0. So what I have to do is do a Kolmann-Weinberg calculation. I have to calculate the quantum corrections of the potential of x and see that, in fact, this thing is fine. It stabilizes x at a value that is not 0. And, in fact, x gets a VEB, and that this VEB, and that this minimum is far from this runaway direction, and that the minimum is sufficiently long-lived that everything works. So this is the kind of thing we're doing when we build these models. So when we're not, so in general, when you build models, there's going to be a runaway and there's going to be a moduli space, but you hope that you can do a Coleman Weinberg and stabilize yourself far from that, and everything will be okay.
And
so
people did more than this, even in the in the old days of gauge mediation. They had completely dynamical models that with no dimensional parameters.
No runaways.
They were metastable. Metastable was perfectly fine back then, just as it is now. And so there are many models that do this.
I'm gonna show you one.
Yeah.
That builds all of this, that works pretty much completely. So, yeah, I just wrote this down to demonstrate that things like this are going to happen, and all of my models are going to take this form. So, for example, so this is a model with one field, X, which gets it after a bit of that. Now I'm going to write down a model with two fields, which get F terms of F. So okay. So again, X is R charge 2. These things have sort of wonky R charges. These are the fields that are going to couple to the messengers and not the field X. So now this is the model. You see I'm built off of the base of this model. I can check that Susie is broken. And in what I've done differently now is instead of taking just this field of R charge 2 and coupling it to messengers, I've in fact taken these fields Y, which have different R charges from each other, and coupled them to messengers. And I've said that M1 and M2 do not have the same R charge. So in fact, in this model, messenger parity is a consequence of R symmetry. So here's a model in which I have multiple fields which get, one of which gets a supersymmetric mass, non-supersymmetric mass, they both get a supersymmetric mass. Gauge mediation proceeds as I wrote down before, and these things are free to be, you know, a 5 and a 5-5 bar, and this can be 5-5 bar, and you know, I can achieve the two-parameter model, for example, this way. So again, this thing has sort of a runaway direction and a flat direction. And I could do a Coleman-Weinberg and make sure that this thing stabilizes itself far from the runaways and it's metastable and it lives a long time.
And it seems like you could get simpler models if you just had a single X field that broke supersymmetry. All you would need is to get your generalized model is just to be able to have another mass scale that is supersymmetric.
Yes.
That can gum couples of the messages.
That's right.
So you don't
yes.
really need two fields.
No, you don't need two
F terms. Different R charges.
No.
Right?
And in fact, I can write you down a model that is simpler than this, except that this is just sort of a clever backdoor way to ensure a messenger parity when these things are like both 5-5 bars or 10-10 bars or something like this. But you're right, I have another model.
The messenger parity is separate. I mean, you can impose that in either case, I would think.
You can impose it with extra symmetries.
I understand. I mean, if messenger parity is just interchanging, well, because you're saying it's
right.
it's literally got to be M1 exchanging with M2
right.
instead of charge contribution.
That's right. I mean, if there's other Z2 symmetries or something I could impose on the Lagrangian.
It only
Lagrangian
has to be an approximate symmetry, so maybe that's not so.
It's so it's a, it's not as easy as you might think to achieve, like, naturally a messenger parody. Like, something that's going to forbid, you know, I don't want this to happen. You know. Random couplings. And so one way to always achieve the messenger parody is, in fact, to just couple these things to completely different fields and then and never have them talk to each other. And that's achievable through the R symmetry. But another way is I can just say, you know, there's some Z2 symmetry where this goes to minus itself and this goes to minus itself, and you know, that therefore this can't, and this is even, so this M1 can't couple the M2. I can do that. But so there are many ways to achieve the message parity, of which this is one. But I do have an even simpler model, which is more along the lines of what you're talking about. I think that this is probably the simplest model you could write down. It does exactly.
Is there a simple reason to see how Y gets an F component?
If I wrote down all of the I would have to write down the entire model,
okay.
Which I could do. Anybody wants to see that. But I'll show you something simpler. This is sort of along the lines of what Marcus is talking about. If I write down this model now, so I'm going to have two fields, X1 and X2. This isn't their R charge now. These are both R charge 2. Okay. And then I'm going to couple these fields that. So here, I'm going to enforce the messenger parity by some external symmetry. So if I make, like, the M1s odd or something, I can write down this model. So here, I can do, so this is exactly what Marcus said, I can do a rotation such that I define X1 to be the only thing that gets an F term. But these couplings will remain. Then, in fact, I'll still have a two-parameter model at the end of the day. These both X1 and X2 will get BEVs. I can do the Kolmogorov-Weiberg calculation. Everything is fine. And they both couple to M1 and M2 here. And easy. That's one way of looking at it. The other way, which is physically equivalent, is that I can imagine redefining X1 and X2 such that only one of these things couples here, and they both get F terms. They both get different non-supersymmetric masses. And also, so then I've also achieved the two-parameter model. I have the same supersymmetric mass, different non-supersymmetric masses. And I've achieved the two-parameter model as well. So this is probably something like what you were thinking about, right? This model, right? So achieving the, and again, like, something even easier to do is I can achieve the five-parameter model this way, because I can just say that this is 5-5 bar, and this is 10-10 bar. In fact, this is automatic messenger parity, because I can't couple a five and a 10 bar together, just like that.
Something just occurred to me. Did Steve Martin do some of this in his paper? There was this paper where the thing that it mostly is cited for is that he did the explicit two-loop calculation for the scalars. It was him and another paper. They both had different things in the title that around the same time did that calculation. And anyway, but I thought that the what was really in the abstract of his paper, the big thing was, I thought he may have been doing some of these generalized messenger sectors. You may want to look at that. You can look at it afterwards. He may have done some of this, not all of it.
It's like Dine and Mason and Dine mentioned the two-parameter model, and there was a paper by Momora and Tweedy and somebody else where they mentioned offhand that you could probably get three parameters with 10 and 10 bar. And I think that mostly it's just not collected and coalesced about exactly how to get, you know, five, how many parameters can you possibly get, and then, like, how what the messenger sector has to look like in order to get them. I think that there are sort of scattered pieces a whole bunch of places. I mean, just like the literature on messenger parody is sort of scattered around. Like, people realize that there had to be one, but then the process of model building in the hidden sector to achieve it wasn't around. So I think what we've done a lot of collecting and coalescing, and then also adding our own models on top of everything. I don't think I've ever seen a 5-parameter model though. Have you seen a five or six parameter model? No. So again, with this type of thing, you might imagine this is, you know, there are easy generalizations of this, which will give, especially if I have a 10 and 5s living here, which will give me the 6-parameter model. But this is sort of the prescription for achieving in the high energy what I told you I was going to do in the low energy. So then you might say everything isn't exactly dynamically generated. I do have these two mass scales in here. And this sort of leads into stuff that I'm trying to do right now, whereby I generate every mass scale dynamically, using things like gauging up condensation and U1 D terms. So there are other ways to build the hidden sector. This, I think, is just, you know, the easiest way to understand it. I could continue writing down models all day, but I think that there's probably encapsulates everything that I wanted to say. Gauge mediation is great. Now we know how to build it so that it has more parameters and has a messenger parity, and we can even build like fairly complete models in the hidden sector that achieve these things.
Okay. I mean, there were a lot of dynamical models built around, early gauge mediation days, and I'm sure that some of them would work fine for this thing as well.
I was really pushing Michael to, I really like this one because it's the simplest thing. It's the simplest thing you could write down, but I think he was happy just with an existence proof about the. Did you ever read David Shee's paper of extraordinary gauge mediation?
Mm-hmm.
And before that, he had one where he built a hidden sector that was almost like this, but it was slightly more complicated, where it gave X of F here and it spontaneously broke R symmetry, that you could just take N such models and paste them together for each X. But so I think Michael was happy enough that that existed, but I'm really a fan of trimming it down and making it as simple as possible. And I think that there are also a bunch of clever ways to achieve the messenger parity should you need it. For example, this one where you assign everything wonky R charge. Because the messenger parity is really sort of arbitrary. So you really want to... It's really arbitrary. There's no reason it should really exist. But I think that if it's a consequence of R symmetry or something, that's a much better reason to think that it exists.
Thank you.
Thank you.